Well, today we're on our final part, as I said, of this look through this amazing chapter of Romans, chapter 12. I hope you've been able to spend a little bit of time in it, perhaps a little bit of extra time as you've worked your way through this chapter with us as well. And here's just 21 verses that Paul packs in such a lot of very practical advice that hinges around this love of God that has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit, and how that's going to work out in our lives and in the everyday, wherever we are, whatever's happening in our lives as well. Paul wants those early followers in Rome, and remember it was Rome. Have a think about what Rome might have been like in those days. I mean, the Romans had killed Jesus, the one that they were following. You know, they'd adhere to the will of the people in that time, you know, just to keep the peace. And yet, here's this fledgling community of believers still holding on to the faith, no matter what else was happening. You know, they were solid in that faith, and Paul is writing to them from a distance to say, here's how you can continue to grow into a fully devoted follower of Jesus. This is what it's going to look like. In fact, this is what it has to look like if we're going to be the Jesus community that he has called us to. And that's why I think this resonates so much with relevance for us today as well. You know, it feels like, you know, it's not easy to be a follower of Jesus today. I mean, for most of us, maybe most of our days are pretty good, but we're living in a world that is fairly apathetic to us, and maybe that's harder than outright persecution. At least you can see it then. But when it's apathy, when 6% of the UK population attend church regularly, you know, we're in the minority. It may not feel like that sometimes, but that is the reality when you go to work, when you go to any leisure activity, or just in your street. You know, there is that sense that we've got to rise above the apathy to be seen to be the people of God. There's got to be something better, bigger than what is going on around us. And so this call is just as relevant. Maybe not directly persecuted today, as we would expect persecution, but actually that sense of apathy and couldn't care lessness, you know, is the challenge for us today here in our nation. How are we going to be light into our world, into our communities, into our workplaces? And I think that's why this chapter is so helpful to us still, that it's for us to embrace today, not just in our minds to assent to it, but actually to live out what it looks like, to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, Paul says, right at the beginning of this chapter. It's who we are. It's exactly who we are that Paul is calling us to. I don't know if you read this week about the Somerton man. Did you read about the Somerton man this week? Am I the only one? Okay, well, I'm glad about that, because let me tell you. On the 1st of December 1948, the body of a man was found slumped on an Australian beach. He was dressed in a suit and tie. He was probably in his 40s to 50s, and in his pocket was found a bus and train ticket, chewing gum, matches, two combs, and a pack of cigarettes. My question is, why did he have two combs? That was my immediate thought. Why did he have two combs? I mean, goodness me, that seems like a bit too much. He didn't have a wallet. He didn't have any cash in his pocket. There was no ID on him at all. The labels in his suit were cut out. There was a suitcase by him with clothes in it. The labels had been removed in all the clothes there. All they found on him was some incoherent writing on a scrap of paper that was in code, and also a torn scrap of paper with the Farsi words on, and I'm going to get these wrong. If you speak Farsi, my apologies to you right now. Tamun should. That's probably wrong anyway. But in English, it means it's finished. That was it. That was all they found in this man slumped on this beach. Nobody knew who he was. But just this week, 70 years or more after the event, somebody feels they've solved the mystery of who this man is. Through DNA profiling and matching people that they already had on the database, they found some distant relatives and they were able to give a name to this man, maybe. His name was Carl Webb. Wasn't a Russian spy, which is what they thought. His name was Carl Webb, an electrical engineer. And that was it. They didn't know who he was. Labels torn out of his clothes. Whatever happened to your mum writing in big letters, you know, your name on your coat? Did your mum do that with you when you went to school? So it wasn't misplaced, yeah? All of it gone in him. But now they found out his identity. Because identity matters. That's why someone kept on looking 70 years later to find out who is this man. And our identity matters. It matters who we are. Because it matters in the great scheme of who God calls us to be as his followers, as his community of faith as well. Today, of course, you just scan a barcode and that's it. We know exactly what it is. Many of you now, fingerprints on your phones. You have phones. Most people have phones, don't they? We know what phones are, don't we still? Yeah. Fingerprints, maybe an eye scan, and straight away it unlocks everything for you. We use so many different things to confirm our identity. But Romans 12 wants us to be identified as a Jesus follower, someone who is fully devoted to the call that he's made on our life, to be transformed, to go on being transformed into the likeness of Jesus. And so Paul has deliberately set out to show us what does that look like. Now, many people today will echo Popeye's famous phrase. Do you know Popeye? Popeye the Sailor Man. I don't know the next line. Does he live in a caravan? No. Yeah, he does. Oh, I'm glad about that. Yeah, I was just trying to get that back in my head. But you know Popeye. You know one of his famous phrases was, "I am who I am, and that's all what I am." You remember that one? No? Yeah. Yes? Please say yes. Please, yeah. Otherwise, it might be somebody else. I am what I am, and that's just what I am. Sorry for those who don't even understand that. But you get the clue. That's it. I can't be changed. This is who I am. And sadly, I've met too many Christians over my lifetime who say exactly the same. It's just who I am. I've met angry Christians who, when challenged about it, say, well, that's just who I am. I've met Christians who don't love people, and they just say, well, that's just who I am. I am what I am. And I have to challenge that, because Romans 12 says, no, you don't have to stay that way. The transforming love of Jesus is to change us into his likeness, to become more like him, to reflect that into our world, into your workplace, into your school, into your college, into your family, wherever you are. Become like Jesus. That's Paul's urgent cry. And you do it by the renewing of your mind. You change how you think. That actually, Jesus isn't finished with me yet. That I can become more like him. Now, you may be looking at the person next to you right now and say, well, it's impossible for that person. They'll never change. Don't say it to them now. Don't, please don't say it about it. I'll be in trouble. But of course, all of us can, by the renewing of our mind that transforms itself into renewed actions. We become different people because of Jesus. Even Popeye can change, I believe. And if he can change, then I can, and so can you. And Romans 12 is full of this transformational living. This is who you're becoming through the transforming power of God's love. And here's the good news, and you can say this to the person next to you. He's not finished with you yet. And you can say this to the person next to you. The best is yet to come. Because we're being transformed. And the love of God is, thank goodness, the best is yet to come. Don't you think that? I think that. Thank goodness, the best is still to come. As we put ourselves at the disposal of God's Spirit and say, transform my mind through your power at work in me. And so in these final verses, verses 17 to 21 of Romans chapter 12, Paul gets to grips with evil, he gets to grips with enemies, and he has something to say to us about everyone as well. So if you've got your Bibles, and I will read these last few verses, Romans 12 verse 17. The words are on the screen as well, thanks. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Simple, isn't it? Simple. Straightforward, Paul at his best. Bang, bang, bang. Here we go. But of course, it's part of this process Paul is leading us to transform our minds out of this I am what I am attitude to actually what I can be. This is what I can be because of Jesus, because of his power, his love at work in me. I mean, Jesus said these things as well, of course. This isn't just Paul plucking random things out of the air. Luke chapter 6, 27, Jesus says, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? Jesus talking to his followers in that first century situation where there was persecution and uncertainty and confusion, and he says those words, and Paul echoes those words in slightly different ways. But this is the Jesus way. This is our identity. This is what marks the people of God out as different in our apathetic world. This is who we can be through the transforming power in our minds. So where do we start? What does Paul say is the starting point for living as God commands us? Well, the first thing is the diagnosis. Consider the challenge. Consider the challenge. Paul acknowledges that there is evil in our world. We know that, don't we? Read the headlines, wherever you get your news feed from. So much of it easy to label evil. In fact, the media often label evil in terms of some situations that have happened. War, famine, killing, abuse, persecution, and on it goes. It's easy to see evil. Just a couple of days ago, the 9-year-old girl, stabbed to death. I mean, it's right in our face. If you're on social media, you'll read angry, hateful, destructive posts, whether towards an institution or whether towards another person. You'll see how easy it is to demean and diminish another person, to categorize a whole nation or a whole people with one particular phrase. It's all over the films, it's all over our TV, wherever we look. Evil, hatred, anger, revenge, road rage. Being a victim of road rage, revenge porn is in the headlines now. An insidious, hateful approach to people. It's there, it's labeled revenge porn because it is about getting revenge, neighbor disputes, relationship breakdown. Perhaps you were told when you were growing up, if somebody hits you, get your own back. Were you told that? Perhaps you were told, don't wait for them to hit you first, hit them before they get round to you. Get in first. Or better still, maybe the Old Testament instruction has become your mantra, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Maybe you prefer that. Of course, God gave us that instruction in the Old Testament as a restriction placed on revenge. Because before he said that, revenge was even worse. But of course, Jesus clarifies it all for us in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 38. Jesus says, you have heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Jesus says this to give a glimpse of the sort of society, the sort of community, the sort of followers that he wants. And into this volatile mix in Rome, Paul is saying, think about your response to evil. Think about your response to enemies. Think about your positive response back to everyone. And that's, I think, what Paul is saying. Our response to evil and enemies is to embrace others, to live at peace with everyone as far as it's possible, to do for others what we would love them to do for us. This is our identity. This is who we're being transformed into. That's the diagnosis. Consider the challenge. So what's the antidote? I think Paul gives us a great antidote here. It's like, give God a go. It's the best I could come up with. Give God a go. Did you hear what he said in Romans chapter 12 and verse 19? Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay. When faced with these challenges, with evil and enemies, Paul's saying, just get out the way. Don't antagonize the situation. Let God do what he wants to do. Let him sort it out. It's a bit like having a big brother at school. I was so glad when I went to the same school as my big brother. It makes such a difference to know that your big brother's there. It's like Paul saying, let God do what only God can do. Get out of the way. Give him a go. Because we cannot do this on our own. To face evil, to confront our enemies, we can't do it on our own, in our own strength. No matter what we want to try to sort out, God says, I will sort it out. So how do you do that? How do you invite God in to deal with a situation that you're facing? To deal with the evil, to deal with the enemies that may be very real and present for you? Well, I think you pray. I don't think this is about abdicating our responsibility. I think this is about inviting God in to pray, to draw him into it. If we're going to have a chance to love our enemies, if we're going to have a chance to live at peace as far as we're able with everyone, if we've got a chance to see light push back darkness, to see evil retreat, we have to pray. We have to bring God right into the heart of it all. Jesus said, and Matthew records for us in Matthew chapter 5, just a bit further on, verse 43, he says, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Give God a go. Step out of the way and let him in to this situation. Why does he do that? Well, I think because this is actually about us. I think when he says to us to pray, to love our enemies, he's saying, I want you to change your attitude towards it. And the best way of doing that is to pray. I want your mind to be transformed about how you view those people that you're struggling with right now. It's learning to live out of love and nothing else. To rely on God's love, to trust him in the midst of it. It's saying, God, this is over to you. I'm bringing this to you. I'm trusting you. And so whenever you're facing a situation of evil, whenever you feel hated or cursed or mistreated, the first response in prayer is to say, God, you are greater than what I'm facing right now. God, you are bigger than this, and I'm going to trust you. And for some of us, that will be the biggest transformation we can take. Instead of feeling we've got to sort it out, we say, God, you are greater than this. And I'm going to trust you. When I'm at the end of my tether and I don't know where to turn, God, you are greater than this. Greater than what has happened in the past. Greater than what is happening now. Greater than anything that will happen in the future. God, you are greater than this. I'm going to bring you in. Greater than when the boss criticizes you unfairly. Greater than the friend who has turned their back on you. Greater than the neighbor who makes your life hell. Greater than the road rage driver who forgot to use his whole hand when he waved at you. The scammer who has scammed you. The fraudster who has defrauded you. The Facebook friend who writes lies about you. Greater than that. God is greater. And we can declare that as true. This is the antidote to the evil that we face. The enemies that we confront. This is how we embrace the everyone that Paul is urging for us as our minds are transformed. But as much as there's a diagnosis and an antidote, there's also a prescription in there as well. And I think Paul says to us as well, you can do something about this. Declare God as greater, hand it over to him, but there's something you can do as well. And Paul quotes the Old Testament. He quotes Proverbs in Romans chapter 12. He says, if you want to try and push back the darkness, if you want to try and and weaken the hate that is there, if you want to disarm the enemies that you're facing or allow the light to seep into the darkness and the evil that's there, this is how you can do it. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. That used to make me smile as a kid when I read that. Burning coals on his head. Just imagine, that doesn't sound very loving, does it? To heap burning coals on his head. But do some research. You can find out yourself why he does that, why Proverbs mentions that. If we turn to Jesus, of course, he says this. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. This is in Luke chapter 6. If someone slaps you on the cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold it. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. What shocking words into that first century Christian church, facing persecution and ridicule and hatred and anger and enemies. What shocking words to them. And yet Jesus made them, because he says there's things you can do. And those words would have resonated around that early Christian community. And boy, did it make a difference to them. Have you ever tried to turn the other cheek to someone? I mean, literally. Because in that day, of course, when your enemy would use their right hand to slap you on your right cheek. Okay? Do you want to try it? I mean, let's have a living illustration. No. We could have a living illustration to this. Now, if you turn the other cheek to them, he's got a problem. Because if he slaps you with the back of his hand, he's declaring that you are equal to him. That way, you're not equal, but this way. So you turn your other cheek, he has to use the back of his hand. Jesus says, let him. Let him try. It will disarm him. It will disarm your enemy incredibly. Now, what about the two cloaks thing? Very interesting as well. If you're in debt and you need a loan, your lender would take your cloak for the day, and they would have to give it back to you at night so that you had some warmth during the night. You had to give it to them between sunset. They had to give it back to you between sunset and sunrise. Now, if you fail to repay your debt, then you would be taken to court and you would lose your cloak. And Jesus says, well, if they take your cloak, give them your tunic, your undergarment as well. Remember, you only own two pieces of clothing. So if you gave the undergarment as well, I don't want you to imagine how that left you, but you can imagine how that left you. You stood up naked in court, which was a bit embarrassing for everybody. And so Jesus says, you know, just disarm them. And then in Matthew 5:41, he says, look, if a Roman soldier asks you to carry something for a mile, which he can, he could absolutely do that. He says, don't just carry it for a mile, carry it for two. Imagine how annoyed the Roman soldier would be. He only wanted to go a mile, but you've carried it 2 miles. Imagine the conversation you'd have on mile number two. That would be a great conversation to have, wouldn't it? You see how this instruction is to disarm. It's to go above and beyond. It's to say, do you know what, I can do something. If your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. And I know it doesn't seem fair, but we let God into it as well. He's a God of justice, and he will bring to fruition what he demands. Imagine the impact of a people who respond to evil and enemies in this way. Imagine the impact on everyone who could see a glimpse of Jesus in it. This chapter 12 demands our reading, but it demands our action as well. It demands us to be open to the renewing of our minds, because this is life transforming. It demands us to change our minds to go the way that Jesus calls us to. Because this is our identity. This is who we are. When Jesus said to you, come, follow me, this is what he saw about your life. This is the future he saw about you becoming the follower of Jesus that started when you responded to that call. This is the transforming power of the Spirit available to all who will invite him in. Is there something that needs transforming? Is there something that needs changing? Is there an attitude or an action that has become part of your life, but Jesus sees that that can be transformed? When faced with the enemy, take the initiative. When you need to forgive, ask God for help. When you've been wounded, ask God for healing. When you've been pushed to a point of hatred, ask God to help you love again. Start living with everyone in view. Do to others as you would love them to do to you. Because that's what God does, funnily enough. That's exactly what he does when he looks in our faces. What did Paul write to the Romans? Romans chapter 5. While we were still enemies, Christ died for us. That's a strong word, isn't it? While we were still enemies of his, he took the initiative. He died for us. Maybe that's a good place to start. To seek his forgiveness again. And to be open to his Spirit's transforming. To be set free. To be filled once again with his love. Romans chapter 5 verse 5. It says that God has poured out his love into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. And maybe we need that continuing top up. You know, I installed a water butt at our house this year. I've saved a lot of water. But you know, last Thursday, Kerry and I went away for a few days and the water butt was empty. We came back on Sunday evening. Thank goodness for Stoke-on-Trent. It was full again. It was absolutely jammed full again. God has poured out his love into our hearts. Constantly pours out his love into our hearts so that we can allow this love to flow out again and bring renewal and freshness to our enemies, in fact to everyone, and begin to push back the evil with the light of his love. It's the only way it's going to happen, if we allow him to keep us filled up with his love. So open up your heart. Step into that place of freedom. Be transformed to be the people he calls us to be.